This is the Kinky Cast, an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 142 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. We welcome guests with opposing viewpoints. Today, we will be speaking with Mistress Manita Femdom in Amsterdam. Here's your host, Woody.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Today, we are reaching across the Atlantic Ocean to the land of Holland, also known as the Netherlands, the actual name. And on the Skype with us today is Mistress Manita, coming to us from the Amsterdam area. How are you, Mistress Manita?
I'm fine. Thank you, Woody.
Very good. I actually started in the scene in the Amsterdam area, and so it's nice to look back on how things have evolved in the last 20 years.
Quite a few times.
Quite a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you are a female dominant.
Correct.
You generally play with men or?
Also with female. I love to play with both.
And so do you have submissives and slaves and things?
Yes, I have. I have my studio with a couple of slaves, and I have in my personal life, I have two. One is also cleaning my house and washing my car, and very handy. Yeah, I love this life.
You know, I'm obviously missing something. My slave does not clean my house and my car. I'm going to have to work on that.
You have to do that, then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she does do other things for you.
She does do other things, and she does those very well. So
nice cooking.
Well, I keep telling my wife that she needs about a 35-year-old male construction worker, because that would get a lot of work done around the house.
It's a good idea. I can use one here too.
Exactly. I think we all could.
Exactly.
We've been talking online for a while, and I wanted to get a little bit of a snapshot into the scene in the Netherlands and how it looks compared to the scene around the U.S. and other parts of the world. As I said, years ago, I was in the scene there, and I have noticed that they have these very large parties, you know, lots of rave music, and everybody's dressed up in leather and vinyls and what have you. It looks very nice, but I found the play to be a little bit light.
That's correct. It is a lot of showing off, a lot of being nice and see me. But I think the biggest problem is that the most of the people who are coming, where we are talking about, is like early days, the clinic, Wasteland. A lot of people go there to be kinky. And be kinky is a little bit different than loving BDSM, because kinky people like to look pretty, only that, and have a little bit of sex, party drugs, a little bit more different than BDSM people. And I don't say that BDSM people are completely neat and don't use drugs or have no sex. That's not true. But it is a different group of people. And I know that on my party, we have both groups, but we can easily separate them, because we have different levels and different rooms, and people can look for what they need. You can dance, you can, maybe I don't can use the word, you can fuck, and you can play, you can do everything, you can eat, you can drink, socialize, everything is possible, one thing,
and have a wonderful time in the process.
Exactly. If you don't like something, what you see downstairs, you go upstairs and you go away for what you don't like.
At least you have choices. How big are your parties? How many people?
The people who are coming now is between the 140 and 180, but the capacity is about 300 people. And in the early days, we had 300 people, but there are so many parties at the moment that it's getting slowing down, but every party in the Netherlands is getting less.
Are these rental venues where you go in and rent a facility, or...?
No, I'm there already for 14 years. I also have my studio on the place where the party is. It started in a period of my life that the studio where I was working is from in 2000. we get some changes in the law, and the girl who I was working for has, how you call that, legalized us. We were legal already, but we had to be legalized in her firm, in her studio.
Okay.
And that was not a good thing for her. So at one point she stopped with the girls and go on with her own. And then at that point I find another place to do my things. But it was also illegal. So at that point, after half year, it was really a nice studio, a very good time. But it also quits because the taxes came and he said you get about 100,000 euros of debt.
Oh,
if you go
good.
On,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not good. But in that time, I was already visiting the showboat where my studio is now with my ex-husband. Because we have a very small house and we could not play at our house. So we went there every month, something like that, to play because they had a little bit of a dark room with a cross and a sling and that was it. But after that, the last studio was quitting because of the tax man. He decided to talk with the owner of the showboat if he could rent the place downstairs in the basement because they are closed for 4 days in a week. And at that point, we discuss it with him and we make some agreements about what I'm going to do to the room and he is going to do to the room so that we have profit from it both.
Mm-hmm.
And that that came out in a very good deal. So I'm still there and we are almost 14 years further.
So what laws do you fall under? I know there's certainly a prostitution law.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Is that the same sort of laws that you have to follow?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sex work in general.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good thing for me that I'm doing my studio into a swingers club because they have the license.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing and a bad thing because my studio is also used about for the people who are into the swingers club when I'm not there. So all the time I have to put all my little things, my lips, clams or everything, I have to put them away. And the people who are coming at the swingers club can use the furniture that's standing there.
And bring their own clamps and ropes and things.
Yeah, own equipment. Yeah. It's also when the party is starting, they have to bring their own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes perfect sense. The people that don't participate in the flogging and what have you, we call that S&M, stand and model, as opposed to sadomasochism. So, you know, they're out there to look good and be seen. Takes all kinds to make a world, I suppose.
No, I like it when people looking good. I really do. I think it is a very important aspect for me. I think it's getting less now because, it sounds a little bit boring. I'm not boring at all, but you get a little bit older and you don't like really the heavy rubber suits and the leather suits.
Yeah, they can be very uncomfortable, you know, when you're in
exactly.
When you're in a full rubber suit and it's, you know, warm out, you could drown in it.
So. You can. But if you like it, then it's good.
Exactly. And, depending on the time of the year, depending on a lot of things is how well it can work. And I know the party that I went to, they had a very strict dress policy. You could not get in unless you were at a minimum level of kink in their eyes.
Yeah. It's the same at my party too. But I think we are a little bit more strict than the other parties. Because we also allow fabric in the world of gothic, child play. It is all the complete suit and it's shining. You have it in all kinds of colors. But this fabric, it's also with the hoods and...
Yeah, it's a very dressed up, it's whatever kinks them, you know, whatever their kink is, and they can have some fun doing
it. Looks a little bit if you come from Mars or something.
Yes, exactly. I remember I had a black cape with a silver liner inside, and I kind of looked like Dracula moving about, so it was kind of fun. And the big top hat.
Okay. Can be impressive.
Yes. So, how long have you been in the scene, and how did you get into it?
I started in 2000, commercial, with Mistress Maxime. That was one of the very well-known dominance in that time. She's not working anymore, but she was really the big girl. She was also one of the first who was getting on the telly to do interviews and Kama Sutra and that kind of stuff. Do you know her?
I do, and I've seen it over there. Very much more open than in the U.S. We're very yeah. oppressed in that area. I used to watch things on the TV channels there that just, I'm going, I can't believe I'm watching this.
So. Yeah, okay. Now, yeah, I think it was about 3 years before that I met my ex-husband. And he was into the BDSM. And he was reading the Massad and the Doma magazine. But he is a truck driver, and he was always at home for 2 days, and he leaves those books with me. At one point, after a few months, I was thinking, yeah, I'm very curious why he likes that. So I was looking at those books, and I was getting more excited all the time. Every time I read a story about all the things that the women with the guys, I was really thinking, ooh, this is very exciting, and little bit of stomach feelings, and I really think that I have to try this out. Really have to do this. So that's our lives getting further, and we try out. But so I was asking him, do I do it okay? And a little bit of that stuff. So that's not really make that it feel a little bit stupid, because you know what your part is, but if you ask, doing well, I'm doing okay, that's not really connecting them. But at that time, I was sick. At one point, I was getting tired of doing nothing, because I'm not very good in doing nothing. And so I saw the ad in a local paper. She was looking for a domina. And if you came to her, you get the education also. So that was one thing. I think, yes, this is something for me, because I don't have to ask my man, if I'm doing it right, I'm going to learn that. Now, we discussed the possibility, and he thinks it was a very good idea, because he was a big fan of Mistress Maxine. So I called her, and of course, I was very nervous, because she was very well known. As he says, you sent some nice pictures of yourself with good-looking clothes and a little bit of your motivation why you want to do this work. So I did, and I think I sent it somewhere in November. So I didn't hear anything, and at one point I forgot. And in the beginning of January, she called me, hi, and I saw your pictures, and can I meet you? Can you come and see me? I was really stunned at that point, because I was really, oh, Jesus, that's her. And so very nervous. And the next day we met. And Rob, I call him Rob, it's easy for talking, went with me, but he didn't, was not allowed to come in. But he bring me there, and we had the interview. And it was quite fun. She was right away quite impressed. And she said to me, you want to stay today? We're going to start with the education. And I really had something, okay, not today. I have to work out in my head before I can do this. Mm-hmm. So she thought it was okay if I come the next day. And later on, Rob can come in and introduce himself. And we talk a little bit with the three of us. And she show also all the rooms where I was supposed to be working in that time. And then I went away. And the next day I went back. And then the time was starting. I was a natural. After 4 days walking with her and with the other girls, I could start on my own. And I'm still working.
How long did it take you from that training to when you opened your own shop?
A year. That was the point what I was telling about legalization.
In the States, we call that a pro-dom shop, where men or women will come to you, yeah. pay you money for X many hours seen, and you then do top type things to them, whether it be humiliation or anything from spanking on up, whatever their yeah. fantasy is. So that's the professional side of you. Then you have your own personal side, to where you want to get your kink going, and not as a professional, but maybe expand it more than what you would do in the studio?
I never play a game. I am always me. If I'm at home or sitting with someone in the garden or in my studio, I'm always me. I don't like role plays a little bit sometimes, the school nanny or that kind of stuff I like to do, but I'm always happy when I'm just me. And I also expect that people who are coming to me or expect something from me, you make the choice. So if you come, you listen and you do what I do, what I like you to do. And that doesn't mean that I don't like to please the one who is coming to me, because I really want people to be happy when they go out, because they pay you money, and that is exactly the same as in every other profession. You want a good quality.
Right.
So you try to give that.
Let's talk about the amateur scene where, you know, just kinky couples and how the laws affect them.
Yeah, I don't think there is a lot that the kinky people can't do, because there are a lot of parties, a lot of possibilities to do their stuff. If you want to start something new, then it's a problem, because also for that parties, you need a kind of license. I don't think that's in the same category as I am, but you have to keep yourself on rules.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really public sex. But they all do, but they all make dark rooms and dark corners. And of course, there are walking some people around who talk to you from, you don't do that here or something like that. But most of the time, they don't see it and they don't want to see it. They don't see it. How you call that? They
They turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, exactly. They look the other way and they think, okay, that's good. People have fun and they do their thing.
When I was there, I went to a party in a barn. This was out near Appledorn. And it was a big, big hay barn. And people would go up in the hayloft and have sex up there. And then down on the main floor, it was converted. It wasn't a real barn anymore. But they had where the stalls were, they would have crosses and spanking benches and things. And so on the main floor, it was that sort of thing. Upstairs, it was whatever you can do in the hay.
That sounds great.
It was very fun. And that was that was my formative days in the scene. And I said, this I like. This is good.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. And then when I moved back to the States, I went through culture shock because I couldn't find anything like it.
No, I can imagine that, because something what you just told me, I don't know where you can find it now here in the Netherlands.
Yeah, I think it was a very special situation there. It ran for a few years while I was there, and it ran on because I came back and visited a couple times, but it didn't kind of went away. To go, you know, they have that traveling sex show that goes to the big arenas around there. I don't know if they have it anymore. But they would have BDSM demonstrations, and then they had all kinds of vendors, every kind of sex toy you can think of. And that's where I networked and met some people that invited me to this party.
And, okay.
And so that was great fun. And one of the fellows that invited me had a leather shop, and he made all kinds of special leather things. And so he would always be a vendor at these traveling sex shows. And when I say arena, I mean big shows. Do they have those anymore?
The only thing that you have is on the big things from the Kama Sutra, and it's a little bit commercial with a lot of shops who are standing there with the merchandise.
Actually, yes, that's what it was called. It was Kama Sutra. I think there's a couple different ones, but that was one of them.
They did it better in that time then. Okay.
It was an entrance to show me, to kind of turn my kinky brain on and say, I was watching a hot wax scene, and that just set me on fire. I went, oh, I want to do that. And they had a cross up there.
The first time I was there, I was really thinking, oh, Jesus, all those clothes and all those. I bought there my first rubber skirt.
Uh-huh.
And I was really completely like a little girl. Oh, I have a rubber skirt. And it was so pretty from the D-Mask, of course.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it was a really eye-opener. But after two visits, at the Kama Sutra, I was a little bit, it was okay.
It was the same thing pretty much over and over. And the only reason I would go back is because I wanted to go to the vendors and I saw things the previous trip that I wanted that I couldn't afford and went back and bought it the second time. I have a lot of things in my dungeon downstairs that came from that time. Leathers and restraints, and I had a pair of gravity boots made for me that were just amazing, all handcrafted leather. They're very nice. So it was a fun time. So if we look across Europe right now, obviously the thinking of sex, it does vary by country. I know that in England they have more strict laws about BDSM than on continental Europe.
That's true. They are a little bit more decent, eh?
Proper.
Proper, yeah, that's a good word. Mm-hmm. Always right.
But I've been to dungeons in Paris and around, and it's kind of anything goes. And what I always found interesting, in the States, they frown on drinking and drugs when you go to a BDSM place because they want you to be sober and in your right mind when you're flogging somebody, I suppose. But when I went to the one in Paris, the dungeon was below a bar. And so while you're waiting for dungeon space, you sit there and drink, and then they call your name and you go downstairs and play. Which I found very nice, actually. It was we were all very relaxed and had a really good time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's a very different culture than in the States.
Yeah, I can imagine that because you also have, in the Netherlands, you have groups of people who are really no drugs, no booze if you are going to play. I'm not so strict. I like a good glass of wine. And in the past, I did some drugs. I don't do it anymore because I think I overgrow it or something like that. I don't like it anymore at one point. I think everyone in his life has to try something to make a decision if you like it, if you want to go on with it. I know for myself, I'm not easy addicted to stuff, so I know I can try something and then make a decision, okay, that's good or not good, or I don't ever do it again, or I do it maybe again in a few years or something like that.
Well, I think you really kind of called it out there because we're kind of an experimental subgroup in society. And, you know, we're trying this and see if we like it, and we're trying that, see if we like it. And and so we're sampling our way through the kink scene, and drugs and alcohol was in there also. And then you kind of find who you are, and you say, well, I don't need those drugs anymore.
And
I like more of this. And certainly the people that I play with on a regular basis, we all have kind of evolved to a point of we like certain things a lot and we don't care too much about other things.
Completely agreed.
And one of the things that's also really critical is we have to not judge other people's kinks. When we came up through it, everything was like a candy store. We saw things that we wanted to try, and then people sometimes they have a bad experience in it, and then they get judgmental about it, and they'll say, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
If you have a dungeon monitor around that's taking care of things and making sure you're safe, and you go in it and you're not out of control, you're not raging drunk, you're not stoned out of your mind, you can still have a very good scene and you can do lots of edge play. I'm an edge player myself. I do lots of things that a lot of people have been very critical about me doing.
Yeah.
But that's my kink. And the people that I play with, they're all about it.
Exactly. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, at my party, I have four dungeon masters, one girl and three guys. And they are very good. They are also very good friends of mine who love doing it. They are already doing it for many, many years also. And it is good that you have a kind of protection, especially for the people who are not experienced and just coming for the first time. And the dungeon masters also explain how everything is working, and you also tell them when you have questions, you come to them, or you can come to me, of course, also. we take time to explain things to people, or if they want to know something, how is this working, or what are you doing. A lot of the people who are visiting my party are also very nice people. People are very open. You can always ask people when they are finished with their game, please can you tell me, can you try it on me, or can I experience what you are doing? People are very kind. That is something what I always recognize, especially the last time I was very much downstairs because I had some problem with my leg, so I had to sit a lot. And then you are downstairs is the best place to see or play. So I was sitting there, I think, for 1.5 hours, and I was really enjoying myself to see how people enjoy themselves and mingle with each other to find out what their thing is or not, of course, also or not. You walk away then, and yeah, I think that's the nice part of my party, that it's, the people are open.
Being open is the way the scene has to work. When closed minds make it very dangerous.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about ages. So you have, we're seeing the scene get younger and younger all the time here. And people literally are coming out of high school right into the scene.
Yeah.
You know, for myself, I didn't find the scene until I was in my 40s.
Oh, okay.
So I started late.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing very young people.
That's the same. It is the same here.
Okay.
I think I did about a month, months ago, I did a show at a student college. And I had a team of BDSM. And I have to perform there. So that was quite fun.
At the college?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
This was the kind of society that the yearly party, and there was always a team, and they also, every year, they had a BDSM thing. One of the guys was writing me, sending me an email, do you know something who wants to do an act? And I was really thinking, I think I'm going to do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
I did that with AET. You interview her also.
Yes,
she introduced
right.
me to you. Yeah, I did it with her together, and she never did the show before. So there was a very special evening with my slave and her slave, and the people were also very excited about the things that they saw. It was a good evening. And you walk around later on, and all those young people are going to ask you questions and how is working this and that. So this was you really had the feeling when you go home that you did something special to educate people a little bit about the BDSM.
To tell you how different it is here, I have spoken at colleges and some of my colleagues have, and they were brought in by the psychology professors to talk about alternative lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And the students are sitting there judging us the whole time. And there was no play. It was just, you know, we're just up talking about the scene and how it is and what it's like to be kinky and those sorts of things. And they'll ask questions that are very, very pointed. How long have you been sick? Sort of things.
Oh?
Very different than what you had.
Oh, it's not a nice experience.
No.
It's terrible.
Well, but on the same token, there's a lot of people that came up and thanked me afterwards because they didn't know about it and they want to know about it. And if you're going into psychology professionally, that is certainly a chapter that you need to know about. And it's a chapter that you need not to judge people about. We've had several psychologists on the show that have talked about the manual called DSM-5, which is essentially the book that tells if you're criminally ill in some way. And BDSM and a lot of kink and gay lifestyles were moved from DSM-4, which it was in as being a problem, to out on DSM-5. So we've made progress, but we've had a lot of people that have lobbied for it. That have gone to the government and said kinkiness is not a disease. And so we've made some traction. It's slow, but we've made traction.
Glad for you. That's about time.
It is. And you know, coming into the scene in Holland and then really kind of, you know, learning being an apprentice. I was mentored by a very well-known male dominant there that really took me and said, this is how you do things, and made me go to classes and all that. And then when I came into the scene in Los Angeles after that, I found an organization that really taught classes, and I took classes on everything from catheterization, sounding, whip throwing, flogging, you name it. So just learning about all these different techniques and then applying them is so important to coming into the lifestyle. And you had mentioned it earlier at your parties, if somebody doesn't know how to do something, they will come and seek you out and you will give them instruction or team them up with another mentor. That is really the way to do it. It's safe. You have an expert that really knows how to guide you, as opposed to just watching a YouTube video on how to beat somebody and off you go. You certainly do provide a great service.
Yeah, I think so. I'm still fairly happy with what I'm doing. And I also still enjoying it that you get a lot of people who are very happy that your party still exciting. And we provide a lot of goodwill to introduce people to understand what BDSM is and how you can cope with people who don't like it, or how you're going to do that with your family and your friends and your colleagues. And because a lot of things what are happening to you when you are playing can give marks, or you get a kind of attitude what you get, or you wear something around your neck what no one knows, but some people understand what it is and how you're going to do that. Because sometimes when you are at work, someone recognizes the thing on your neck and is going to ask you questions. Yeah, are you going to be open or you don't? It's all choices what you can make, because people can use it against you also.
That's good that you brought that up. How is that in the Netherlands? Are you allowed to be fired from work for being kinky?
I really don't know. It's such a long time ago that I worked for a boss or something like that. I didn't sort it out.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit lazy at that point, because I live in my own world a little bit, because my whole world is BDSM.
I think all of us want to get to that point someday where we can have that our world 24/7. It's a really wonderful thing to aspire to, and you've done it.
I'm also quite proud of what I did. It's almost 14 years of party and 16 years of being in dom into the BDSM scene, and I still see it as something special.
How often do you throw the parties?
Every month.
Once a month.
Every month.
When I plan on coming to Amsterdam, I will schedule around your party.
I think that will be very nice for me.
Yes, it will. Mistress Manita, thank you for joining the Kinky Cast today and giving us a perspective on some of the really wonderful things that are going on in your life. I think we all can look forward to doing that in ours.
Yeah, I hope you will proceed with getting every time a little bit further into the acceptance of the other people.
Well, we all hope.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks again.
I hope with you. Okay, bye, Woody. Have a nice evening.
You have been listening to episode 142 of the Kinky Cast. For more information about this show, go to kinkycast.com. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week when we speak with Natalie Noir on BDSM Basics.